Okay, good afternoon. I think I will go first, and then I will turn it over to Jeff and to Dean. Usually we go through all the proposals. I'm not sure we need to do that at this time yet. There are a lot of them. Jeff knows them by heart, so he can go through them, but I don't think we'll start on that. I think what I would like to start with today is there's a proposal we didn't cover on the call the other day, and that's Resolution G2, which was given to the clubs today. And that resolution deals with a medical stoppage by the ATC spotter. That's the spotter that's upstairs in the press box that will, if passed, will then have the authority to stop the game. If they see a player that displays obvious signs of disorientation or is clearly unstable. So in other words, Dean instructs all the officials on the field to make sure we look for players that might be in distress and have them leave the game. But in case we miss a player, this ATC spotter will have the ability to stop the game, to radio to the side judge, I think it is, and have the side judge stop the game, have the player removed for a play, and so the player would be looked at. So that is a resolution that we hadn't covered with any of you last week, just because we were still developing it as a committee, and it was given to the clubs this morning. I'll have Dean cover with you catch, no catch, because I know there's interest in that, and he's got video to show you. And I thought I'd have Jeff talk a little bit about, I know we gave you our position on instant replay. The reason we gave it to you in writing is just because it was longer than we typically take a position on, and there was a lot of different points to it, so we just wanted to cover it in writing. So if you want, I'll let Jeff talk to you a little bit about replay and all the replay proposals and what we put in writing for you.
Thanks, Rich. As we talked during the week, we have, there's 13 of the 18 proposals that were presented by the clubs deal with instant replay, one shape or another, whether it's be able to review everything, whether it's to be able to review just defense fouls on defenseless players, whether it's increase the number of challenges, involving the game clock, the play clock, those kinds of things. There's one proposal that the committee favors, and that's the one with respect to the timing on the game clock, not the play clock, but the game clock at the end of the half or the end of the game. It needs to be more than 1 second at issue. And so, we're going to obviously see how that goes with the vote. The committee's position for years has been to oppose involving fouls and replay for a lot of different reasons, for the two different standards that we've talked about. We've looked at a lot of tape this offseason. We looked at the fouls particularly relating to hits on defenseless players. We had 27 of them this year. We looked at them as a group. We could not agree on a number of them. That's just the nature of the standard in replay. A number of these fouls will go on Monday morning at the league office from the officiating department to player discipline, and oftentimes that process will take 20 to 30, maybe an hour, to determine whether or not it was in fact a foul. So you can see the issues that we're going to have if we involve those things in replay. The Canadian Football League experimented, did a one-year experiment last year with adding to replay defensive pass interference, where the coach could actually generate the foul. They had 55 instances during the season. 49 of those were initiated by the coach, and so the coach basically, in essence, became an official in those instances, and only 6 were overturned. So we just have there's a lot of things at stake, and the big thing is the standard. The standard is very, very difficult. The on-the-field full-speed standard versus the frame-by-frame review. And basically what you're doing is you're adding another element of subjectivity. So those are the basic reasons for the committee being opposed to adding fouls to replay. So.
Okay, so I'll take you through the catch, no catch. A lot of discussion about the process of the catch, what is and what isn't possession. We'll talk about this was generated obviously with the play from the divisional playoff game with Dallas and Green Bay. And the committee doesn't recommend a change to the rule, but looked at the language and tweaked the language in an attempt to make it clearer and easier to understand. For years, the requirements for a catch, the way it was communicated in the rule book, is control, both feet, and then after that, the receiver had to have the ball long enough to perform an act common to the game. And that was defined as being able to pitch it, pass it, clearly advance the ball as a runner. And I think as part of this discussion around this play, it was that act common to the game, football move, whatever you want to call it, that I think created some confusion. And so in an effort to clear that up, the committee looked at the language and made several changes. And so in order to complete a catch, the receiver has to have control, both feet on the ground, and he has to have it after that long enough to clearly establish himself as a runner. And this would fall directly in line with our defenseless player rule, where we say a receiver is protected until he can clearly establish himself as a runner. And what does that mean? That means he has the ability to ward off, avoid, protect himself from the impending contact. And then we get into, is the player going to the ground or falling to the ground to make the catch, or is he completing the catch while upright? Well, if he can clearly establish himself as a runner, then he's not going to the ground to make the catch. If he hasn't clearly established himself as a runner prior to going to the ground, then he has to hold on to the ball until after his initial contact with the ground. And that's the rule that applied here. When you watch the play, Bryant is going to the ground. He's falling to the ground to make the catch. He has not clearly established himself as a runner prior to going to the ground, so he has to hold on to the ball until after that initial contact with the ground. He's basically got to hold on to it throughout this action. If the ball touches the ground and comes loose, it's an incomplete pass. And you'll see the ball hit the ground, and then it pops loose. That's all part of the catch process. And so the committee looked at the language and feels clearly establishing himself as a runner makes the rule a little bit easier to understand. And when we talk about clearly establishing himself as a runner, just a couple of examples. We're here, the receiver has control, both feet, and he clearly becomes a runner and then extends the football out for the goal line. The difference between this play and the Bryant play is that here the receiver has possession, he's become a runner, and then he extends the ball for the goal line. If the ball breaks the plane in possession of a runner, it's a touchdown at that point. Another example here. Where the receiver, he's not going to the ground to make the catch. He establishes himself as a runner. He has control, both feet down. He has the ability to ward off, protect himself from contact, so he doesn't have to hold on to it when he lands. Just one more example. When we talk about holding the ball until after the initial contact, you'll see here, Nelson goes to the ground. He lands on the ground, and then the defender knocks it loose. That's a catch because he has completed the requirements, held the ball until after his initial contact. His initial contact is there, then the defender knocks it loose. So the committee looked at a lot of tape, didn't recommend a change to the rule, but wanted to clean up some of the language, put it more in line with the defenseless player rule, and the receiver who can clearly establish himself as a runner does not have to hold on to the football if he subsequently goes to the ground to be a catch.
Question? You got questions for Dean?
Dean, in the change of that wording on the Calvin Johnson rule, the difference between time to make a football act and establishing yourself as a runner, do you feel there's any difference in those two? Are there any plays where the ruling changes from one thing to another based on that difference in words?
I don't think there's a difference. I think it's an effort to just make it easier to understand. There's what gets lost in this rule is the time element. and that requirement. And that's the subjective part, and it's hard to quantify that. And so the rule book has done it for years, having it long enough to perform an act common to the game. Now what we're saying is having it long enough to clearly become a runner, to clearly be able to do something other than just attempting to secure possession of the football. So I don't think the standard changes, but the way we're communicating the standard has changed.
Yeah, Rich, I wanted to follow up on the ACT spotter proposal. What was the impetus for that, and was part of it the Edelman situation in the Super Bowl?
The Edelman situation was a play we looked at, and it was part of the issue. There were a couple other plays that go back a couple years that we looked at, and really it came a little bit from the Health and Safety Committee just saying, we've got these ATC spotters. They've got a really good vantage point. They've got technology in their booth. They're communicating pretty well with our trainers and doctors, and we've got a pretty good rhythm going there. Why would we miss a play where a player shouldn't come out? And maybe this becomes the fail-safe. So that was the genesis of it. We do not expect this to be a rule that gets used a lot. We expect it to be a fail-safe when people just don't see this player and the distress the player may have had. The ATC spotter does and stops the game.
Dean, back to the Dez play. I don't think there's any question that while he's falling, he does reach for the goal line there. Was there any thought that, you know, I understand what you're saying about establishing yourself as a runner, but that act alone, even though it's happening while he's falling, that could be considered a football act and maybe change it to include that, or is that just too...
There was a lot of discussion about that. I think in this rule, the way it's written, the way it's being administered is it's a consistent standard. And there was a lot of discussion, well, should attempted football move, should that trump going to the ground and the requirement of holding on to the football? And I think once you go down that path, it becomes more subjective. What isn't a football move? Right now, the rule is consistent. We're not talking about a lot of plays. I understand this is a significant play in the game, but we're not talking about a lot of plays over the course of the last five seasons since the Calvin Johnson play. This allows us to consistently officiate the play. It does, if we change the rule to make this a catch, you would create more turnovers in the middle of the field, more fumbles. You would change the standard on the upright player, how long he had the football. So that was all discussed. It was a lengthy discussion, but I think ultimately the committee felt that this allows us to be consistent in the application of the rule.
A question on the medical timeout. Is there a way to know that the player will get enough time to be evaluated, the regulation 7 to 10 minutes after he comes out?
The way the rule is written is it just says that the player must undergo the required protocol. So it goes back to the trainer and the doctor that they'll have to go through the protocol. Now, that protocol may lead to a concussion examination, and it may not, but that's the way the rule is written.
Hey, Rich, what are the semantics as far as application? Will it be the head official having a buzzer? Will it go to the sideline? How is that going to be applied?
Yeah, I can go through that. And I think it's important to understand that this isn't the biggest change is just the timing of it. Right now, the ATC spotter is doing this. He's communicating with the medical staff if he recognizes a situation. This now allows the ATC spotter to communicate directly with the game officials in their wireless communication system to say that we have to get 82 out of the game. So it will happen before the next snap. He'll communicate directly with a member of the officiating crew. That game official will immediately stop the game. The clock will stop. If the game clock is running, if the play clock is running, they will stop. They will freeze. The player will be escorted to the sideline. The medical staff will attend to him if they need to on the field, or they will take him off to the sideline to attend to him, and then everything will start up again. The clocks will wind. It's not a timeout. Quarterback can't go to the sideline. Coach to player will be shut off. Player will leave the field to get the appropriate attention, and we'll start the game back up again.
Doesn't that possibly change the whole scope of the game if you can't recall? For example, like if you have certain personnel on the field, and then you lose a key player.
They will be able to substitute, and in the case of if it's the offense bringing the new player, the defense will have the opportunity to match up. But we're not going there. We're going to start the play clock from where it was, unless it was inside 10 seconds, and then we'll go back to 10. But the thinking is we didn't want to create a situation where a team potentially could gain a competitive advantage or disadvantage through this process.
First, quickly, does that have to be voted on?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Also, on the overtime proposal, do you have figures, numbers on, since this current system came in, how many one possession games there have been a win on a touchdown, and then yes, how many went to two possessions anyway?
Well, since the rule changed in 2012, we've had 49 regular season overtime games. 42 of those both teams have had a possession, so about 85%, which is significantly more than where we were. I think the committee was alarmed with some of the numbers from 94 to about 2010, where that number was about 58%. And the team winning the toss was a higher winning percentage than where we were in 2014, where the team winning the toss, I believe, in 2014 won the game 27% of the time, which is lower than it's been. So just trying to take the coin toss out of it, but maintaining that sudden death aspect, because the way the rule is now, you still have sudden death in that the game can end on any one play. If you made it a requirement for both teams to have a possession, then you eliminate that sudden death aspect of the rule.
Yeah, so I would say that the statistic that would say that maybe as the membership we got this one right is that from 2012 to 14, the team that wins the coin toss is winning the game at 46.9%, and the team that is losing the coin toss is winning the game at 46.9%. So we've ended up kind of where we wanted to be, because before we were at 64%, 60%, we were at high numbers for the team winning the coin toss.
In regards to the eligible stuff in the tackle box as well, I noticed that was the competition committee submitted that one. It wasn't from Baltimore or Indianapolis or anything like that. Were there any other alternative options that you guys discussed as far as how to designate this player is eligible or is ineligible on the field?
Well, yes. I mean, we looked at the college rule, which is unique, which works for them. But in the event that there's a change, they require them to change, actually put a new jersey on. Okay. And we're a little uncomfortable with that concept for obvious reasons. We also did not want to lose the opportunity. We had an instance last year, I believe in Atlanta, where they lost a couple offensive linemen and then tight end goes in to play tackle and he's reporting. Okay. So we didn't want to lose that. We still want to be able to allow the offensive lineman to go to the tight end position and the goal line situations and things like that. But when we looked at everything with a broad brush, it became apparent that it's also difficult to officiate and enforce, because you've got an offense that's hurrying up. You have a referee that has to tell the defense who's eligible, who's not eligible, and we felt that the best thing to do was put that eligible number in the box. That gives the defense a chance to recognize it if you need to do it. That also gives it a chance to be enforced. You know, there was a real creative play in Tennessee this past year where both the tackles and the guards were eligible players that reported ineligible, and they, in essence, almost executed the Stanford Cal play, where they all started laddering the ball. We didn't want to take that part out of the game as well.
Dean, question. On page 2 of the committee's position on instant replay, you talk about the need to improve consistency among officials, replacing officials, sports performance consultant. Did you see improvement in 2014, and how far do you have to go to get it to where you want it to be?
Yeah, I think we have seen improvement. I think the scrutiny is at an all-time high, and we accept that. That's part of the challenge. But I think we've seen improvement, but we know that we have to continue to work to get even better. And what we're doing is, you know, we're really focusing on the staff and do we have to have more turnover? Do we have to get more officials? look at the low performers and move them out of this, from off the staff. And physical fitness is a really important aspect of what we're doing. Like, we're working with sports nutritionists and performance consultants to get our officials up to speed in that area. And that's something that we're really committed to.
On the extra point, you have the one proposal to move the ball, snapping the ball back to the 15-yard line. There's also been some talk of putting the snap at the 1-yard line to encourage 2-point conversions. Is there any chance that those two end up getting somehow combined? Which way do you think the conversation will go this week on extra
points? Yeah, so I think on the extra point, it kind of typifies what we do as a league. We kind of start this discussion and keep the discussion going for a number of years, and this has been going on for a couple of years. And so this year you have the proposal from New England, which is to move it back to the 15-yard line, snap it there, and go. You have last year Pittsburgh, Coach Tomlin pushing the idea of what about if we put the ball at the 1-yard line and therefore incentivize teams to consider going for 2 more often. I'll be interested to see tomorrow where the discussion leads us. We've been down this path before where we'll have this discussion for a number of years. You never know what will happen as to whether a proposal will have enough to get 24 votes. That's not an easy thing to do. There were some of us that were on the committee for a long time when we really thought the 2-point play at no time had a chance to ever pass. And now it seems like we've had the 2-point play for a long time. So, you know, it sometimes it takes some time. We'll see what tomorrow brings.
One more thing on that. Is there any chance of the elimination of extra points?
It's not something we've discussed, Alex. I would say no. I have not heard that proposal. Nobody has made that proposal. And I don't think it's – I think last year we kind of said, even in the room, that wasn't the solution we were looking for.
Jeff, from a coach's standpoint, the change in the language – on catch, no catch. Does it make sense to you? Does it make it more understandable?
Yeah, I mean, we spent a lot of time on it, and I think it really clears things up. It really does. I mean, from a coach's standpoint, if you're going to the ground, hang on to the ball. You know, it's pretty that simple. That's how you're going to coach it. But, excuse me, if you become a runner, I mean, I think it really cleans things up for us. So, I think it, you know, because there, and like Dean said earlier, if you start talking about reaching the ball out or doing something like that on the way to the ground, you just invite a lot of gray area back into the interpretation.